Case number 13-7022, Norman Williams and Diane Howe as legal representative of J.H. Appellants versus Romarm, S.A. et al. Appellees. Mr. Wienhoff for the appellants, Mr. Piscotti for the appellee.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. I'm Daniel Wienhoff. I represent Norman Williams and Diane Howe, who are the legal representatives of the young child in the Wrongful Death and Survival Act case before you. May it please the Court, the defendant Romarm has admitted that it is wholly and owned and operated by the Romanian state sovereign. This admission is found in the amended motion to dismiss filed by them on May 14, 2012, in the U.S. District Court, case number 112CV436. And the docket entry on that is number 6, and it's page 8. It states very plainly, under the title section 2, Romarm is a foreign corporation owned and operated by the Romanian government.
Is this issue in dispute?
Pardon me?
Is this issue in dispute?
It definitely is, Your Honor.
What part is in dispute?
We dispute that it is a dominated or controlled by the Romanian government.
You're disputing that? You say it's not?
No, we were stating that they've admitted that.
Well, then what is the dispute?
Well, that's our position. That's their position, so I don't know.
Is there any dispute that the Romar is owned by the Romanian government?
No, I don't believe there is.
Then why are you talking about it?
Why am I talking about it? It's important when it comes under the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act, because there are if it's not owned and operated by the Romanian government, it would be. The due process clause of the Fifth Amendment would be.
Are you suggesting the due process clause is irrelevant because it's a subsidiary of the Romanian government?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Do you have any authority for that proposition?
I do.
What is it?
That's their admission. And we cite to Byton v. Palestinian Authority, which is 310 Fed Sup 2nd 172 at 179, and that's the DDC 2004, and that cites this court, IT Consultants versus Pakistan, which is 351 Fed 3rd 1180.
So your theory is there's no personal jurisdiction relevant if the defendant is a wholly owned subsidiary of a foreign government.
That's correct, Your Honor. And also a case that that Your Honor has written, it's Sisipio versus Islamic Republic of Iran, which is 30 Fed 3rd 164-166, D.C. Circuit 1994, a case written by Your Honor. This admission by Romarm presents a prima facie evidence, or presents prima facie evidence showing that Romarm is not separate nor juridically independent from the Romanian state sovereign, but rather it is controlled by the state sovereign and is at least an agent of the state. When controlled by a state sovereign or being its agent, Romarm cannot assert the defense that personal jurisdiction must be based on the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment. So long as there is subject matter jurisdiction, an exception which I will cover next under the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act, and service was properly tendered, there is no need to examine whether a foreign state defendant has the minimal contacts that would otherwise be a prerequisite for personal jurisdiction under the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment. And the citations which I gave are Byton and to this court, LT Consultants versus Pakistan. Put another way, subject matter jurisdiction under the FSIA plus service of process equals personal jurisdiction under the FSIA. This is based upon 28 U.S.C. 1330B and the FSIA Section 1608. Romarm has conceded to proper service. Whenever a foreign sovereign controls an instrumentality to such a degree that a principal-agent relationship arises between them, the instrumentality receives the same due process protection as the sovereign, which is none. And that is the citation to GSS Group Limited versus National Port Authority, which is 680 Fed 3rd 805 at 815 D.C. Circuit 2012. McKesson versus Islamic Republic of Iran, 672 Fed 3rd 1066 1071 D.C. Circuit 2012. And TMR Energy Limited versus State Property Fund of Ukraine, 411 Fed 3rd 296 at 301 D.C. Circuit 2005. Secondly, Romarm has also admitted to acts which would confer subject matter jurisdiction under the FSIA under the exception engaging in commercial activity. In the affidavit attached to its amended motion to dismiss, which is at docket entry number 6-1, TP4, in paragraph 23, Romarm admits as follows, quote, the records reveal that the incident rifle, parenthetically the assault weapon, was sold, parenthetically, by Romarm on or about 2008, comma, contract C2414, /March 22nd, 2008, to Century International Arms, Inc., /Century Arms, Inc., which is a company located in 236 Bryce Boulevard, Georgia, Vermont, 05454, USA, unquote. Thus, Romarm has admitted to commercially selling the assault weapon directly to a company located in the United States, which is therefore conceded to have been used as the murder weapon in the wrongful death of the young child of the plaintiffs. And this admission by Romarm would confer subject matter jurisdiction upon this court.
Did you assert below that Romarm was actually controlled by Romania?
It's under, Your Honor, the docket entry on that's number 6, page 8, which states, quote, Romarm is a foreign corporation owned and operated by the Romanian government. And it repeats that in the second sentence of that.
That's in what document?
It's docket entry. No, it's their motion, amended motion to dismiss the case.
But where did you assert that Romarm is actually controlled by Romania? Did you ever assert that?
I argued it in the trial court. Yes, we went back and forth on that because they were claiming sovereign immunity. But they are the ones that have
because
asserted.
Because ownership is not sufficient to waive due process. It's got to be more than that.
That's a key.
Ownership of
state ownership is not enough to waive due process. If the corporation is a separate legal entity and not controlled by the state, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Where it is that you put in something to verify that point?
Well, I can only assert what they've conceded to, and that is that Romarm is a foreign corporation owned and operated by the Romanian government. We have done no. There's been no discovery in the trial level. We asked for discovery, and we tried to. They presented a protective order, and that we were denied discovery. So we don't have any further information. We can only go by what Romarm is stating.
Did you make the argument in your brief that you are making here that personal jurisdiction is not relevant? That minimum contacts don't matter?
That due process doesn't matter, Your Honor?
No, that personal jurisdiction is not properly applied here.
I'm not quite hearing that. I'm sorry.
I'm just asking if you made the argument in your brief that you're making now.
We made the argument, we tried to make the argument that they were claiming sovereign immunity in the trial court. We didn't succeed in that. They constantly claim both sovereign immunity, and they also claim that they were a private actor.
Counsel, let me, if I can, cut through and help with respect to the presiding judge's question. As I recall, in your reply brief, you make a fleeting reference to the proposition that minimum contacts is irrelevant here because there's subject matter jurisdiction. Well, that was a non sequitur, as I understood it. That didn't make any sense to me. It is clear that what is conceded is that Romarm is a foreign corporation owned by the Romanian government. However, it is the defendant's position that it is an independent entity. And as an independent entity under the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Statute, we still have to have minimum contacts with the corporation. Isn't that correct? It's not the government itself that's selling.
Well,
it's a separate independent corporation. So therefore, minimum contacts are relevant.
Well, Your Honor,
they made a passing reference to that in the reply brief.
Yeah. Well, Your Honor, if it truly is an independent juridical corporation, separate and apart from the Romanian government, yes, there would be due process.
No, wait a minute. It was separate and apart. It is an overstatement. It's owned by the Romanian government. The defendant admits that.
Well, they not only admit they're owned, but they admit it's operated by the Romanian government. So the name Romarm could be an alter ego of the Romanian government. We don't know that at this point. And we haven't been able to.
You will agree it makes a big difference whether it is simply.
Certainly.
Why don't you let me finish my question?
I'm sorry.
It makes a big difference whether it's an independent entity owned by the government as opposed to simply an arm of the government.
If it can show as an independent entity that is separate and distinct.
It can be owned by the government, but if it's an independent entity, then we still have to have minimum contacts for purposes of due process. Is that correct?
I would agree with that, with the caveat that if it's operated by the Romanian government, that it would not be an independent entity.
Well, we'll see what the defendants.
Are you saying that in one of their submissions they conceded owned and operated?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's in the docket entry number 6, page 8, and it's in the title of their, it's amended motion to dismiss the case, and it's in the title, section 2, and it's repeated in the second paragraph of that title.
And what's the document?
It's the amended motion to dismiss. It was filed on May 14, 2012.
And it says they can see that it was owned and operated by Romania.
Correct. I'm quoting it directly. I have a copy of that motion if somebody wants to. I only have one copy, but if there was someone here that I could bring it to the court.
So your basic argument is this whole constitutional issue is irrelevant.
We are, Your Honor.
All of these briefs are, the vast majority of these briefs are irrelevant.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Including your brief.
I'm afraid so. I have to, it's their concession, it's their admission. I have to stand on what they say. I have no further.
That isn't the point. The point is, if that's what you thought the record was below, and in your fight to get discovery here, if you're resting on a concession, why didn't you frame your argument that way? That they conceded, owned, and operated, and therefore the FSIA is not.
Well, Your Honor, correct. As we went over this, begin to find that when they were trying to draw these contradictory statements that they were a foreign sovereign and therefore they could not be sued, and then on the other hand they were a private corporation and so therefore they could be sued.
All we're asking you is, it doesn't matter to us how you were jousting below. We're looking to figure out how you framed your case on appeal. And if you thought the simple question was that the personal contacts are irrelevant here because they've conceded it was owned and operated by Romania, why wasn't that the whole argument you advanced?
Well, basically, we discovered it.
You discovered it after you submitted your briefs?
Yes.
It's a little late.
Well, as I understand, Your Honor, personal jurisdiction can resolve itself even as late as we get to the circuit court if it's discovered in time.
Counsel, may I suggest that let's assume, arguendo, that the personal jurisdiction issue, which the briefs deal with extensively, is legitimately before us. And why don't you present the argument assuming that to be true? Assuming that personal jurisdiction is relevant, which is what the briefs deal with, why don't you present your argument on that? And then we can ask defense counsel concerning your alleged concession.
Yes, I would say under the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act that certainly if it is an independent institution that they would have due process clause protection, which would require minimum contacts, and under the FSIA.
Well, what's your argument on minimum contacts? That's what you're saying.
Minimum contacts is that they have a direct effect in the United States by the sale of its weapons to an exclusive distributor in the United States who sells those weapons under a contract arrangement whereby Romarm and their independent distributor work together jointly. And I brought this out in the article, the newspaper article that we had on this case in my Exhibit D, that they work jointly in order that these arms are being sold and being that it's a relationship between the two. And they've been selling to this exclusive distributor for 10 years.
But you have no indication that the defendant sought to distribute in the District of Columbia?
Well, they could. They're prohibited from.
Isn't that an important point?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor, because they sell to the borders of the District of Columbia, and we don't know what the volume of the sale is to Maryland and Virginia. This weapon came from Maryland. Most of the weapons that get into the District of Columbia come from the border states. And oftentimes companies will not control their dealers in the adjoining states. The dealers may be under...
But as I read the McBride case in the Supreme Court, and focusing really on the concurring opinion by Justice Breyer and Justice Alito, put aside the plurality opinion, that you still have to show something indicating a desire to distribute in the jurisdiction that is relevant in the case. And I don't see any indication that there's a desire to distribute into the District of Columbia.
Nor did you allege
anything under that effect.
Well, Your Honor, you can go to other cases which I cited.
But the Supreme Court case dominates the field at this point, doesn't it?
It doesn't. There hasn't been a majority opinion. There's been a...
No, but I was looking to the concurring opinion by Justice Breyer.
Well, there's a foreseeability... Besides purposeful...
No, he doesn't rely on foreseeability. He says there has to be some action taken in which the defendant desires to distribute in that jurisdiction. Something. And you have nothing alleged here in this case.
Well, number one, the problem here is that it begs the question. They are not allowed to distribute weapons.
Well, that's a very powerful argument for their point.
But indirectly, it could come into the district.
Well, that's not volitional.
There's never cases that are cited that are not FSIA cases because there aren't any on product liability in the District of Columbia or weapons. The Hinckley case, which I cited, was prior to the...
prior to McBride, the district court opinion.
Yes, it was. It was reviewed and then reversed on other grounds. But the Beretta case, for example, which is by the en banc D.C. Court of Appeals, D.C. versus Beretta, found that that the weapons that were not being sold in the District of Columbia.
But isn't McBride the law we have to follow now?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think we have the McIntyre case.
I'm sorry, not McBride. McIntyre is the case.
About the McIntyre case.
Yes.
The McIntyre case is, again, a plurality decision.
Yes, but I was focusing on Justice Breyer and Justice Alito's opinion, which is the concurring opinion, which, if you put it with the plurality opinion, makes a majority. So I look to Justice Breyer's opinion and ask whether this case would fit. And the answer is it not? No, it wouldn't fit. There's no specific act in this case alleged suggesting that the defendant tried to get a sale in the District of Columbia.
The Breyer-Alito decision does concentrate on the concern of small companies that would be selling their merchandise and being somebody taking that merchandise to some distant area, and then there would be jurisdiction. I think they mention Alaska, for example. If you're making pottery in North Carolina, you go to Alaska and something happens, somebody gets hurt. Then you're forcing that small company to come all the way to Alaska to defend the case. This is not that at all. This is an international corporation or government which is selling arms, dangerous products, into the United States market, and they have not purposely curtailed the ability or the ability of its dealerships to keep these weapons out of the District of Columbia.
How would they go about doing that?
Well, there's a number of ways. If, for example, a dealership is in a crime area in Maryland, for example, you would make certain that that dealer had certain controls over it, so that the record of its thefts that can be discovered very easily through the police department records. You would cut off or control that particular dealer. If that dealer was found to be selling to straw men being people that show up and buy the weapons.
Do you have any evidence in that effect?
Your Honor, the problem is...
Do you have any allegations?
We don't have...
Do you have any allegations in that effect?
Well, that's been pretty common.
Do you have any allegation in this case to that effect?
I don't, Your Honor, we've tried to get discovery in this case.
My question repeats, do you have an allegation to that effect?
Do I claim that in my brief?
Yes.
I certainly...
No, in your plaintiff, in your complaint.
Well, I didn't claim it in the complaint. I argued it extensively, and I did argue.
You want the defendant to disprove the negative. You don't have any allegations.
The whole problem here is that they couldn't sell to the District of Columbia. They couldn't bring the weapons here directly. They won't allow them to. And all the cases that come out of the district court and this court and the Fiat case and the Intotten case, whenever there's a reasonable an ability on the part of the corporation to reasonably know that weapons could be brought into a particular area or a product would be sent into a particular area, in the case of the train crash in the Intotten case, that it's they're held to jurisdiction. They're held to personal jurisdiction.
That's the stream of commerce theory that the Supreme Court once had, but it's abandoned.
It's more than that. It's knowledge. It's reasonably able to show that they should have known that these weapons are very attractive in this case, and they would come into the District of Columbia. But in all the product liability cases, in Gatewood versus Fiat, there was no car dealership in the District of Columbia, but the product came into the District of Columbia. There's no privity between the injury and the purchase of the product, and there's no privity here with the strict liability. I mean, the District of Columbia has publicly, through referendum, tried to prevent the inroad of weapons into the district. They couldn't do it through negligence, so they did it through strict liability. This is D.C.'s District of Columbia trying to protect itself. 600,000 people.
Thank you, Mr. Wingler.
Okay.
Thank you. Anthony Pisciotti on behalf of Rome Arms with co-counsel Jay Porter. I think the court has hit upon exactly what this case is about, which is minimum contacts are required, due process needs to be met, and neither of those things can be accomplished.
Well, before you go there, I'm looking at your document now. It's not only in the text, it's the main heading. Romar is a foreign corporation owned and operated by the Romanian government.
Yes, Your Honor. It's operated partially. It's partially owned by...
Your heading doesn't say anything about partially. It says it's owned and operated by the Romanian. This is your heading in your motion.
And Your Honor...
You're conceding a point you now want to rest on to get to personal contacts.
If the description in the heading was...
And in the text.
...improperly...
That you want me to keep reading? It's in the text, too.
No, Your Honor.
Romar is a corporation that's wholly owned and operated by the Romanian government.
I understand that, Your Honor. It still requires the minimum contacts.
Why?
Because I believe that's what the statute says.
A separate legal entity? How can it be a separate legal entity if it's owned and operated?
Because the relationship of ownership doesn't have to be complete.
Operated
also doesn't have to be complete to the extent that they
contribute.
But you're
not arguing that in here. You're not saying it's incomplete.
And Your Honor, and if we said that, then that was an error on our part.
So everybody's got errors here. We don't even know what we're listening to
today. This case is beginning to look ridiculous.
Both of you come up and say you didn't really mean to say what you said below. What are we supposed to do with that?
Your Honor, the case has always been argued as it's a case of contact, personal jurisdiction.
Well, there may be a mistake here.
Counsel,
you
stop conceded. Stop for a second. What do you understand the law to be with respect to an entity owned and operated by a foreign government?
If it engages in commercial activity, due process and minimum contacts are still required.
Even if owned and operated?
Yes, sir.
So that the issue is not whether it's owned and operated. Under what circumstances, now this is why I get a little confused. A entity which is completely owned, I don't know what you how you'd say, there are a certain point that an entity controlled by a foreign government does not need to show, you do not need to show minimum contacts. Where is the line?
Right. I believe it'd have to be government action in the sense of not a commercial aspect, but something governmental in their activities.
In other words, as long as it's a commercial entity, whether owned or operated or not, your view, minimum contacts has to be shown under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why aren't you making that clear in your brief?
I apologize if it wasn't clear, Your Honor. We thought that we had clearly articulated our response to the appellant's papers.
I thought the whole question was whether it was operated. I knew it was owned completely by the Romanian government. If it was run by the Defense Department,
yes, sir.
Then what would be the law?
That wouldn't be commercial activity, and that would be distinct from what we have here.
Okay, as long as it's commercial activity, the fact that it's owned and operated does not get us around minimum contacts.
That's our position, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, we'll have to check carefully cases on that.
What case says that?
I don't recall, Your Honor, as we...
If a foreign government...
I believe it's the statute
itself.
If
it's a foreign
itself,
government, and foreign government, there's no doubt about that. This is a foreign government actor, but it's engaging in commercial activity. And what case says, in that circumstance, personal contacts still must be shown? Where is that? I mean, it may be there. I'm just not aware of it.
I believe we cited it in our
well,
briefing.
Well, tell me what it is. I really don't care. This is a crucial point. I'm not aware of this. I may learn something today. I learned something every day, but I'll learn a lot today. What are you talking about? Where's the case?
I'm drawing a blank right now, Your Honor. I apologize.
But you asserted to Judge Silverman very comfortably, yes, that's the law, but you don't know of any case.
I believe we referenced them in our brief, Your Honor. I assumed our focus was going to be on the minimum context due process analysis because I don't believe that there had been anything else that was argued on appeal directly than those aspects. Those are the things prepared to
Well, in his reply brief, counsel made a fleeting reference to the proposition that as long as he had subject matter jurisdiction under the foreign statute, he had personal jurisdiction. He didn't spell it out, but he made that assertion in his reply brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're not prepared to deal with that now? I mean,
I believe it was raised on reply for the first time and shouldn't even be considered. Two, I believe it's an error, and that's why this case
well,
is...
Well, I don't understand why you're not prepared to tell us what cases say it's an error. I mean, it may be you're absolutely correct. That if the corporation is owned or operated, but it is independent of the Defense Department, then we must show for jurisdiction minimum contacts. But as Judge Edwards points out, it'd be nice if somebody cited such a case. I think you're right, but I can't remember the case myself.
I understand, Your Honor, and I apologize because I thought on his appeal he had the burden of bringing forth the case law to support his positions, and therefore that was the position we're in, and I apologize. Should have anticipated that a fleeting reference would require such great preparation for today, and I apologize for not being able to give you a case.
All right, let's go on. Assume somehow other Judge Edwards and I we're too old to have to do our own research. It's not fair. But in any event, let's go on and address the minimum contacts question.
Yes, sir. This is a product that was made in 1970 in Romania. It's sold in Romania to an entity that's going to then export it. Romarm says no further contact with this product after it leaves Romania. Anything in the U.S. is done independently through an independent entity, which is an importer, an independent distributor, and then legally under the law can only be sold through federally licensed firearms dealers. There is no purposeful availment, as the cases say, including the very recent Daimler case, Daimler v. Bauman from the U.S. Supreme Court. A defendant has to have an economic interest that they target the jurisdiction with. And by plaintiff's own admission, that can happen here. because it's legally prohibited from selling these types of firearms. There's no contention. It's undisputed. We can't do that. Therefore, the economic problem can't be met, and therefore there can be no due process because there's no availment. There's no minimum contact. There's simply nothing here except for criminals, unfortunately, taking lawful products and then misusing them in the district. And those are the proverbial unilateral acts of third parties. And the cases that govern, I would submit, is the McIntyre case is directly on point, Supreme Court precedent that guides the court. And in McIntyre, they found no jurisdiction, even though there was some commercial activity in New Jersey. Here, we can't even get there because by law, there can be no commercial activity associated with these products.
Justice Breyer, if we're looking to that as a guiding light, Justice Breyer suggesting, yes, regular course of dealing and stream of commerce may not be enough, but knowledge coupled with that may be. And how's he going to figure out anything on knowledge unless he gets discovery?
Your Honor, I think that the district court is reviewed on an abuse of discretion with respect to whether or not they allow discovery or not. And
that's no answer. At least it doesn't work for me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Abuse of discretion is not an inviolate principle. We find the district courts abuse their discretion sometimes. So I guess my question is, why wouldn't we reverse here if knowledge is a critical consideration and you got to have discovery to figure that out?
Certainly. Well, Your Honor, I think Justice Breyer was talking about knowledge of their commercial activity
right. Aimed
at the forum. Here, right. There can be no commercial activity aimed at the forum.
Sure there can be.
Well, no, respectfully, Your Honor.
Sure, they're unlawful dealers.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
They're unlawful. They're dealers.
That is not commercial.
To do.
I would submit that that's not commercial activity.
Have reason to know that once I sign my contract, it's not only going to be in the stream of commerce, but it's going to include Maryland, Virginia, and the sales are going to be even higher because their big load of sales is into the district. And that's essentially what I'm intending to do. I know, I mean to, and I'm happy.
Well, Your Honor, 2 points there. One is the cases say foreseeability is not enough.
I'm saying knowledge.
Yes. But beyond that, it has to be commercial activity, not criminal activity.
Commercial activity, that is, these sales, this money, I'm able to give it to the original contracting party, give more guns than less guns, because I know they're eventually a large number are going to end up in D.C.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that Romarm's transfers custody in Romania. After that, it's the activity of independent, unrelated to Romarm's. There's no alter ego.
Is this all in the evidence?
There are no agents.
Is this all in the evidence?
Your Honor, this is the law in the U.S.
Is this all in the evidence?
It is not, Your Honor. No,
that's the point.
It's not pled, Your Honor.
No, wait, that's a different answer. The first point I'm trying to ask is, if you don't have a discovery, you don't know any of these things, what you're about to assert and what they would like to be able to assert.
Well, Your Honor, it's a 12B motion. He has to assert his allegations. In our 12B motion, we have to rest upon the allegations in the complaint. This is not a Rule 56 motion, Your Honor. I apologize. That's why there's none of this. But the court can take judicial notice of the fact that there is a complete legal scheme, licensing scheme, that for the sale of firearms, they have to go from licensed individuals to other licensed individuals. And here, you have to have a federally licensed importer, federally licensed distributor, federally licensed retailer, and then you have to...
This is in the record.
No, Your Honor, but you can take judicial notice.
No, we can't.
You can't?
No.
Sorry, Your Honor.
No, we can't. I mean, I still am struggling with the question that you comfortably assert, both of you are comfortably asserting to Judge Sylvan, opposite propositions, but I don't see how GSS, which I guess is what you're relying on, GSS, in creating this notion of independent legal entities, did not mean to carve the FSIA up in the way you're suggesting. That is, if you are the federal government, the foreign sovereign, engaged in commercial activities, That's different from being an independent entity, which is merely owned by the foreign sovereign, not operated by the foreign sovereign. And neither one of you answered this. So all what you're arguing now presupposes I agree with you on that first proposition, which you so comfortably say we don't have any problem with the FSIA, and I'm not sure.
Your Honor,
and GSS is a case, and if that's what you think you're relying on, it doesn't get you there.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, you never get to that argument because it wasn't properly before the court because it was raised for the first time on reply.
Okay. So you're saying that was never raised below?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I know my time is up. Would you?
You want it to be up?
No. Maybe.
At least you smiled once, anyway.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wimoff does not have any time.
Oh, I have no more time.
You have no time. We will give you 1 minute.
Okay, I just wanted to say, Your Honor, we did establish a prima facie on the question of personal jurisdiction by documenting the fact that the weapons were in the District of Columbia and they come in here at the rate of one a month. At least they did during the four-year period that this wrongful death occurred. So obviously there would be some knowledge accredited to that. Secondly, we have no alternative forum. As it would be in the McIntyre case. McIntyre could go to Ohio. We don't have that here. We would wind up in Romania as our forum. So I don't know where we would go under the doctrine of necessity if we couldn't bring this case in the District of Columbia.
Thank you. The case will be submitted.